All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NBA podcast for Thursday, January 26th. I am Doug Norrie, and I am sitting all by myself today. No James Davis. He is traveling today, so we're going to be doing a solo podcast. Like I mentioned at the beginning, we will also be talking some NHL and PGA with DFSR's Chris Durrell today. So a little bit of a different podcast today as I sit here all by my lonesome in my chair and make sure I have enough things to fill the time to talk about NBA today, but there's always stuff to talk about, so I think we're going to be all good. I'm from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short, and we are in the daily fantasy space trying to help you get started or keep winning on FanDuel and or DraftKings. So you can head over to our site now, dfsr.com/membership, and that will hook you up for a free 3-day trial to our projection system. It's powered by Lineup Lab. That's going to give you optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings. Gives you access to our entire player pool of projections. You can go over to the site, also just go into the chat room, ask the DFSR faithful, the chatters there, say, hey, is this worth it? They'll give you their honest opinion, and you're good to go. Free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. You're all set, and includes all sports that we do, though right now it's just NBA with NFL over and baseball not yet starting. So today, looking back to yesterday was it was a wild night in the NBA. Ownership percentages were sort of all over the place. I mean, there were some chalk plays, like obviously Nerlens Noel, 90%. You could pretty much see that one coming as he grabs the start again with Embiid and Okafor out. After that, there wasn't too much in the way of just super chalk. You saw some Dragic, maybe in like that 60% range on FanDuel. Norman Powell was up right 50%. And, you know, but after that, you know, people really struggled at power forward. And we were in a situation again with, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me for the 10,000th time, shame on Anthony Davis, because, you know, he comes back from injury. He's put up, it comes out that he's going to have no limits, and then he gets hurt again. I mean, this is where he ended up being in our top optimal lineup, and that hurts. It's hard to overcome that. It was kind of looking at a price play on him, and this is a situation we've said it many times where with a guy like him, you just can't, you can no longer really trust it. We couldn't trust it before. He lulled us into a sense of security, or at least he lulled me into a moderate sense of security, which makes no sense because he had missed a couple games prior to that. But get buzzed off injury there. And then over on DraftKings, things are looking pretty great. And then Hassan Whiteside, it comes out after the game that he was playing on a sprained ankle. And it was one of those things, actually, because James had texted me earlier in the night. He was complaining about, he was on a plane. He was complaining about the Wi-Fi on the plane in the old, you know, first world problems that nobody wants to really hear about. But he's complaining about the Wi-Fi on the plane. And he said, just fast enough to work, just slow enough to drive you crazy. And I said, man, that describes what I'm watching with Hassan Whiteside right now. Cause we're watching that game. I'm watching that game and I'm thinking to myself, man, Whiteside, it just doesn't, he looks hurt. Like he just doesn't, sometimes Whiteside's thing is that he's lazy, or you know, he gets disengaged in games, which definitely happens. Last night it was something different. He couldn't elevate, and it just looked like he was slow. And then after the game, it comes out that he's playing on a sprained ankle. So it was one of those ones where we love the value he was getting on DraftKings against the Nets, but he's playing hurt. And if we had known he was playing hurt, which I looked back at notes and I just didn't see anything, maybe I missed something, but if I'd known he was playing hurt, he would have had a downgrade there. So that kind of buzzed it off. So not to go the complaining podcast route here, but just the note that sometimes those injuries, mid-game injuries or, unreported injuries, they can play a big difference. Injuries are going to be a part of what we talk about today. There are some interesting guys that have already been ruled out. To a couple other notes about last night, you know, Cleveland continues to struggle. I'm not sure what they, you know, LeBron seems to say we need to step it up or we need to get depth. And I just don't know where that's going to come from them. So it's going to be an interesting situation to watch them going forward. They lose in overtime at home to the Kings. That's a brutal loss for them to lose to that Kings team at home, especially considering how much they've been struggling lately. You know, the other team that's really interesting right now is the Sixers. They've won 5 of their last 6. They're still too far removed, I think, from the playoffs to make an actual push. I think there's something like 7 games back of that last spot right now. That might be too much for them to make up with their personnel. But that's going to, I think though, as you see them playing healthier, the fact that they've been decent, and this has a DFS implication to it, the fact that they've been decent, I think could begin to continue to solidify some minutes, especially from the starters when Embiid's there. They've already said they're not going to lift the cap on him. So you can't really expect too many more minutes from him there. But in terms of the other guys, like Covington, maybe some TJ McConnell, they're just playing really well right now. And when that happens, you know, if there's a chance that this team can make the playoffs, I don't think that, like, in their heart of hearts they want to make the playoffs, but you know, if you can see them continue to win, or just and that East is pretty weak, you could see some minutes stabilize there, which we're always looking for in DFS. So that was just some of the things that stood out to me from last night. I'm planning on going back and watching a couple more of these games today, sort of while we're working, to just kind of see if there's anything I missed in terms of just personnel changes. But let's look into what we have going on today. There's a couple injury pieces that are important before we get, that are going to really inform most of the slate. Now, the slate starts an hour later than usual today. It's at 8 o'clock Eastern rather than 7. Pretty short, only four games, which is your typical Thursday sort of national broadcast night where they just don't really run too heavy of a schedule. But we have an interesting situation here. So the Mavericks have already ruled out Wesley Matthews, Dirk, and Darren Williams. So that's right now, that's 3/5 of their starting lineup that has already been ruled out. This is 10:30 in the morning Eastern Standard Time. So we're going to have a day to figure out where those minutes go. And as you know, minutes in the NBA are king. That's the highest correlated statistic, or, you know, input that we can use for daily fantasy accuracy. It's something we here at DFSR really pride ourselves on, and continuing to get those minutes, what we would call right, going in. So when we look at the Mavericks, there's a couple things that are going to happen here for them. One is, I think they're going to play Pierre Jackson at the point guard. Now, Pierre Jackson is a guy that has barely played this season. The sample size on him is small. This is really just basically his first season actually playing in the NBA. But that, you know, for basketball, we're in a weird situation. Do we know much about him? No. Can we be pretty confident about the minutes he's going to play? I think we can. You know, if you look at this Dallas roster right now, they are without their starting point guard. They don't have Barea. You know, Devin Harris can do a little bit of that, but they've never really been willing to play him a ton of minutes. After that, you know, it's basically Seth Curry, and that's it. They don't really have any guards on this roster right now. The team is super thin as it is. It looks like they're going to be playing with only like maybe 7 or 8 players. I could be wrong about that, especially if they call someone up from the D League today, but looking at their roster, I just don't even know who else they're going to run in the backcourt. I mean, they can run a little Justin Anderson at the 2 and maybe bump Seth Curry to the 1. I think no matter what, though, with Jackson, the fact that you saw 24 minutes out of him last night when Williams went down, that's a sign to me at least that they trust him to be, you know, Rick Carlisle at least trusts him to be on the court. So can we give him, you know, 38 minutes? No, definitely not. But a guy like Jackson at 3,000, basically the minimums on both, you know, 3,000 on DraftKings, where he's, you know, extra important to have a guy like him. He's probably, I'm double checking now, he's the minimum on FanDuel as well. Even that 25 to 30 minute range for him, that's enough. That's enough for him for me to play him in every cash game. I obviously would like to hear that he's starting. That would make me feel better. They're the first game, so the fact that there's a good chance we just have the starting lineup ahead of time, just because, you know, they're the 8 o'clock game on this slate. I almost think that he wouldn't need to start, and I'd still be willing to play him, just because if he got 25 minutes off the bench rotating between, you know, if they were rotating some of their guards. But so I think he does draw the start tonight. I think that you can make a reasonable minutes speculation on him. I think you can make a reasonable minute speculation on Seth Curry as well, that he's already a starter. They've already been playing him minutes, and now they're really short at the one and the two. 35 minutes around that range seems like the floor to me for him. It could go higher, especially if they're just so thin. So Curry and Jackson, to me, right now, become not must plays in cash, but really darn close to must plays, considering that you can spend up and some other points and some other positions. Another guy like that is Harrison Barnes. We've seen Barnes' usage skyrocket when guys like Dirk are not there. They will run Barnes a ton of minutes because he can kind of move between the 3 and the 4. That is another guy that I'm probably going to want to have in there. And it can never look good to look at your lineup and say, because we'll get the comments like this a lot. Someone will say, oh man, this happened the other night with the Spurs. A lot of Spurs in that lineup. You know, when I say that lineup, they mean the optimal lineups, the lineups we're planning on running for cash games. A lot of Spurs, and you can't really hammer home this point enough. When you have a ton of minutes open up on a team, that is really just, it's kind of like DFS 101. Doesn't mean that all the time these guys end up, Thon Maker starts for the Bucks. We don't necessarily need the jam Thon Maker into lamps. There's not enough of a history. That was not sort of like a binary A to B, everyone's out, Thon Maker's going to play. So it's not always these situations. But a team like Dallas here, They're so thin. We have some track record on a couple of these guys, like Barnes. The other guys are cheap enough that we can speculate. I can see a situation where we're playing three, maybe four Mavericks tonight in this game against OKC. Because the other thing is, too, when their roster is this thin, they're almost blowout proof because there's just no one else to play. So could Westbrook and company, you know, blow the doors off Dallas? Possibly. It's definitely sort of in the cards that it could happen for them. So, but I think I'm considering the prices and the implied usage bumps that some of these guys will get. 3 to 4 Mavericks is going to be totally reasonable for me tonight. And that it might not look good on paper. You're not going to want to stare down the barrel at a guy like Pierre Jackson and think, oh my God, my fate rests in a guy. At his price for the implied minutes that he could look at, I think it's totally reasonable. So that's really the big piece of injury news that we have going into tonight. And rather than go by position, which is what we usually do here, I think I'm just going to focus a little bit on some of these situations we're looking at tonight, where where we're maybe going to be trending for cash games or some of the things that we'll be looking at going into this slate. So the big question here is, you know, in terms of money allocation, is Westbrook. So Westbrook is playing the aforementioned Dallas team tonight. They are heavy favorites. They have not a huge implied total, but that's because Dallas plays slow. Now, Dallas is a hard team. This is going the opposite direction now. Dallas is a hard team to evaluate because when we look at some defense versus position numbers, which are important, though not totally critical. They're critical in the sense that we want to use them as good basic starting points, at least for how we look at teams. You know, it's not the only thing. We also look at things like pace. Now, obviously, pace will influence DVP numbers just because of volume and whatnot. But Dallas plays at such a slow pace that it's hard for the other team to have bigger implied totals, just because they're not going to touch the ball enough. Now, so that becomes the question here with OKC. Will Westbrook see enough volume to pay these prices off? They have a lower total now. My gut instinct here is to say that on FanDuel, we're going to be playing him. There's just enough ways to save, like we mentioned, Jackson and Curry, a couple other cheaper guys here. There's enough ways to save that I'm not so concerned with getting his salary in. On DraftKings, it's a little tougher. You're allocating a lot of money for a guy on a short slate. You really need a lot of cheap plays to come in for someone like him to cash. Now, do I think people will play him? Probably. Do I think that he ends up in sort of our lineups? Like, so for right now, this is, again, you know, before 11 a.m., when we run some queries and we run some iterations on the outside lineup, he's showing up around the top. So, like, you know, third or fourth lineup right now. When that happens with expensive guys, it typically only goes one way. We already locked in some cheaper value, probably. So I sense that he'll probably be in there. It's probably correct. There's a big drop off from him to the next most expensive play on either site, which I believe is Towns, right? Yeah, so it's Karl Anthony Towns. There's going to be a question here about Jokic. I'm going to get to that in a second. But the overall feeling I have is that if Westbrook is here now and the situation for him is pretty set in stone, I mean, short of them resting him, which I really don't see happening. He's not a guy that they ever – no, it's on the back-to-back. And that's not a guy that's ever really there's never really bantied about that they're going to rest a guy like Westbrook. So I'm not worried about that. You know, could they do some management with his minutes tonight because it's on the back-to-back? Possibly. I think it's still probably worth it to run him just because he's so much better than the next closest option here, though you will have to figure it in with price. So those are some of my OKC thoughts. I think Steven Adams is a reasonable play. It's really hard after those two guys on OKC. I don't love Oladipo. He hasn't really, you know, he had a little streak where he was putting up some numbers. The price has climbed a little bit. He's just not a guy that excites me. And after him, that you really can't trust anyone else. They don't play Sabonis enough minutes. Cantor's been sort of up and down with his minutes. I could probably take a flyer on Cantor, especially on FanDuel, because I'm forced to, unfortunately, roster two power forwards. But yeah, OKC doesn't do a ton for me, mostly because I just don't love the matchup. I think Dallas is still incentivized to slow this game down, even without those bigger three in Dirk, Wes, and Darren. After the OKC Dallas game, the Indiana Minneapolis or Minnesota Minneapolis. I'm thinking baseball, Minnesota. The I The T-Wolves, you know, they have their minutes. The minutes floor is solid on some of these guys. The matchup is actually decent. Indiana's not a great defensive team. I think that some of these guys have just been fairly priced at this point, all things considered. And this is what happens when you have rock solid, steady minutes from guys like Towns and from Wiggins. So a lot of times you'll see price fluctuations based on players. You know, the coach is just kind of jerking around their minutes, or they are just inconsistent plays in general. That's not really the case with Towns and Wiggins. They play a ton of minutes. I guess LaVine kind of slides into this idea as well. They play tons of minutes, and when you just play this many minutes compared to your peers, your price is just going to trend typically higher than sometimes we want to pay. So right now at small forward, you have some, you know, I mentioned Barnes. You have some interesting guys. It's Paul George kind of has a decent matchup going the other way. Gordon Hayward is a great matchup against the Lakers. I'm not sure I want to pay $7,600 for Wiggins here with the idea that he's very scoring dependent, and I just think he's been fairly priced at this point. So it's really been difficult for him to crush this value at $7,600 on FanDuel. When I say crush it, I mean, you know, 5.5x plus. He did it last game against Phoenix, so that's another great matchup. So it's going to be close. I take that back. I don't think it's going to be that close for me on Wiggins. Towns, I see, is a little bit different. I do like the matchup for him a little bit more against that front court of Indiana. They don't have really much in the way of defensive measures to put in place for him. I mean, Turner can range out a little bit. I don't think they're going to put Thad Young on him because that would be a disaster. So I do like, if I had to pick between those two guys on Minnesota, I think I would definitely go Towns over Wiggins. And on the Indianapolis side, I do like Paul George. If CJ Miles drew the start again, I think he's an interesting one if he can play some minutes. You know, he played 34 last game against the Knicks, and if that's what they want to keep their starting lineup looking like with him at the, you know, at, I guess at the two is what he played. He took 14 shots in that game. That's a great sign for him. 34 minutes for Miles. He's still coming pretty cheap. I think there's a way that you can slide him in. I'd probably like it a little bit more on DraftKings at 3,700, where, you know, now you've combined a couple different guys into some really nice cheap value on DraftKings. So I could definitely go the Miles route there. Indiana, they will play their starters minutes. They've been sort of trending that way in the short term. They're not like the safest team in the world, but you know, Paul George is the guy. 39 minutes last game. He took 24 shots. We've seen some of his usage rounding back up in the right direction. You know, he's not the Paul George of old. They don't need him to be because they have guys like Teague and Turner there that can shoulder some of that offensive weight. But I still like George in this matchup. Wiggins is a fine defender, though I don't believe him to be elite, though some people can maybe disagree with me on that. So it's not like the Wiggins matchup for me scares me away at all from Paul George. So I do find that team to be interesting tonight. You know, and so I mentioned a couple of their just sort of question mark teams. So we have two of these question mark teams going tonight. And by question mark teams, I mean teams that are almost impossible to figure out what their plan is from game to game. And those teams are Denver and the Lakers. I would throw the Magic into that mix when they play. There's some other teams that are like, you know, the JV squad of unknowns, but the real varsity team of the varsity group of teams, we just have no clue what their plan is on a night-to-night basis, is the Lakers, the Nuggets, and the Magic, and two of those three play tonight. Denver is a team where they clearly don't know what they want to do personnel-wise. They've had a couple of injury pieces that have cropped up for them, which has caused them to have to shuffle around some of their rotations. I think at this point, we would all agree that Jokic is an elite fantasy player. I don't think there's no disagreement about whether or not Jokic is elite. He is. You can't get to 10,000 price on FanDuel without having, you know, he's basically the same price as Anthony Davis right now. And that's correct. The part that we struggle with every single time with Jokic is what are his minutes going to be? Last game he plays 35 against Utah, kind of crushes them, even against that, you know, a super solid Utah team on the defensive end. But the two games before that, 27 against Minnesota, 21 against the Clippers, and then 37 against the Spurs, this is all over the place. It's not always foul dependent with him. In the past, we worried about his foul trouble. You can't really ascribe that to be the exact issue for him now. Sometimes just the whim of what Mike Malone does or doesn't want to do. I want to, against this Phoenix squad, part of me is tempted to take him to 35 minutes and just kind of make him the other expensive play besides Westbrook, because no one else has his kind of upside on a night-to-night basis. But it's scary. It's scary to try to think about rostering 10 more than 10,000 for a guy that you are just that could just run out there for 25 minutes. And yes, can Jokic hit? Well, no, he can't hit value at 25 minutes. He needs less minutes than most to be able to hit that upside. But you're getting into that. You're getting into a price problem here with him, and I'm just not sure how comfortable I feel with it. It'll be interesting to see how people evaluate this situation. He's a much better deal on DraftKings at 9,300. So, like for instance, he's less than Towns on DraftKings by $600. I think that's a meaningful difference. He's only 200 less on FanDuel. It's a meaningful difference for him to be that much less over there. I'm probably more willing to do it on DraftKings, but Jokic is an interesting situation. After them, you know, it's hard to know exactly what they want to do. We've seen Fareed play 30 minutes. We've seen him play 14 minutes. I don't. If you want to try to figure out, just kind of grab the balls out of the bag and, you know, look at it and decide what kind of minutes he's going to play, which is the joke we have going around here right now, that Denver's reaching into this bag with a bunch of bingo numbers on it before the game, and that's kind of how many minutes you play going in. If you want to try to figure that out, I think Gallinari is probably the safest, but it's not too exciting of a play, I don't think, overall. Although you can, you know, it's probably a little bit more palatable on DraftKings. On FanDuel, we have some other small forward value. Wilson Chandler, if he's still coming off the bench, who knows? So Denver's just a very difficult team to evaluate on a nightly basis. On the Phoenix side, we've seen Tyson Chandler playing way more minutes lately. His price has climbed because of it. He's been excellent. So he's basically been a double-double machine over the last four games. He's averaging probably, if I were to just eyeball this, somewhere around 14 rebounds a game over the last four. He's averaging right around probably 18 or 19 points per game. Those are elite numbers when you're talking about a 6,600 salary. We know that Jokic is not a good defender. That's been the problem with him staying on the court in the past as he gets into foul trouble. He doesn't totally understand defensive rotations. He's just not a good defender. And if Chandler's going to, you know, Chandler's not an offensive force in that teams, the Suns won't feed him the ball on the offensive end and have him make a play, but he's great in the pick and roll, which obviously Jokic has a problem with. He's elite on the boards, and I do think that even with the price climb, we're still getting a little bit of value on him. I probably would either pay up for a guy like Towns or down to a guy like Adams if I had to make the choice on Chandler. I think you can see some people play Devin Booker tonight. His minutes have been up there in the stratosphere, though he's a guy like Wiggins where his price is just maybe climbing to a point where we just can't totally, we're not getting away with anything with Devin Booker at this point. So some interesting Suns plays. I'm not sure I'd go that direction. The Denver side is the one of this game I really want to target. They have the highest implied total by far tonight. It's actually really not even close. They're up, kind of pushing up toward 120, which is just a crazy number. And it will be hard to look at that number and not say, man, I need to have a decent part of this Nugget squad going in because they're so much higher than the next closest team. So I just wish, this is the theme every time the Nuggets play. I wish we knew exactly where their minutes were going to go. And if we knew that, we would feel safe, though. That would probably put their prices in the... They'd be like the Timberwolves. I mean, if we knew Jokic was going to play 35 minutes, he would be a $12,000 player almost. So that's really just the problem that we have with the Nuggets. And then finally, we have Utah-LA. I think you can see some people getting in on the Utah side here. Hayward, Gobert, George Hill. As they get healthier, the problem with the Jazz is as they get healthier, which is happening now for them, that some of the stats that we've seen some of these guys put up earlier in the season don't totally translate to what the Jazz are doing on the court now. So they spent the first part of the season with player X, and that rotated throughout the entire squad basically, being hurt, leaving it to player Y to take over the load. So, you know, that's, okay, well, George Hill is out, so now maybe more usage goes to Gordon Hayward. Gordon Hayward sits a little bit. That goes more to George Hill. Favors is out, so we get more of rebounding on the Gobert side. But now that they're getting healthy, that is sort of, it's evening out for the Jazz. And it's hard to look at their early season stats and make a clear A to B case for now this player is going to, this is what player X has been doing. This is what he's going to start doing now. Still, there's just too many mouths to feed. Alec Burks is healthy. He's been looking fantastic. But then bringing him off the bench, they sorely need that. That Jazz team sorely needs that sort of one-on-one ball first scorer to just definitely come in off the bench and create You're seeing him snipe away some of the usage from some of those other guys, especially on the secondary rotations. So the Jazz now, there's a chance right now that the Jazz are just sort of falling in the middle of their value, where these guys, are a lot of them are priced on a season worth of Jazz being unhealthy, therefore having other players, like I said, shoulder the load. Now that it can be spread out to the rest of the team, I'm not sure we're getting much with Utah right now. It's a good thing for Utah. Utah's a really interesting team to me. I'm excited to see what they can do in the playoffs if they can be fully healthy. It'd also be interesting to see if they just get rid of a piece going down the or into the trade deadline, get rid of possibly Favors and try to replace him with maybe a little bit more of a versatile four. But the Jazz in general, to me, a fun team to watch now. I'm not sure I love what we're seeing from a DFS perspective there. And then the Lakers are a total mess. I mean, the Lakers did a totally classic Lakers move last night where four starters played 26 minutes or less. And they started Jose Calderon for reasons unknown. Julius Randle plays 20 minutes. Head into the chat room or send me an email if you have any clue what Luke Walton's plan here is. I don't have any idea. I don't understand the rotations. I've spent a season now, or half a season basically now, looking at this team and trying to figure out what their plan is. I don't have any idea. They seem to want to keep Clarkson and Williams together off the bench. They played them a decent amount of minutes last night. It's very difficult to trust players coming in off the bench. So the fact that they're playing the Jazz tonight probably just makes it a wash anyway. We don't need to speculate and then play that speculation against a slow, really solid defensive team. So I don't think we're so worried about it. But I just wanted to, I'm more mentioning it because it's throw your hands up in the air situation and just, I don't know, be frustrated and not be able to figure it all out. So Lakers to me, total stay away. No need to get to really, no need to overbuy anything there other than tournaments. And I'm not even sure you're getting away with anything on the tournament side. I think that pretty much sums up my basketball thoughts. 30 minutes worth of basketball thoughts of just filibustering you on the basketball side. We're going to go talk to Chris Durrell now about some hockey and PGA. Good luck with the NBA tonight. We'll be around the chat room answering questions leading up to 8 p.m. lock. So head over, ask your questions there. Make sure you sign up for that free 3-day trial. All right, let's talk some hockey and golf. All right, I am here with Chris Durrell, the DFSR resident hockey and PGA expert that produces a majority, all of our golf content and a majority of our hockey content. Chris, how's it going, man?
It's going really good today.
We wanted to have you on here, talk a little bit about hockey as we perfectly timed. This is the last slate right before the All-Star break, I believe. But Chris has been putting in just crazy amount of hours on our hockey system this season, really bringing it up to what we feel is one of the best projection systems in the industry when it comes to NHL. And for a guy like me, I like talking to Chris about PGA and NHL because these are not my core competencies. I don't know much about NHL. I know even less about golf. So having Chris around is always great to bring him on, talk both of those things today. So This is a huge slate for NHL tonight, right?
Yeah, 13 games tonight. So all but four teams are going tonight because the All-Star break starts tomorrow. So I think the All-Star festivities are like Saturday, Sunday type thing.
Sure. So big slate going in NHL. What are the things? Let's say I'm obviously listening to a basketball podcast here, but I want to maybe get into NHL. I'm worried about the NBA All-Star break where there's nothing going on and I'm going to be bored and I want to be able to put in like a quality NHL lineup. What are some of the first things you look for when trying to sort of determine value for NHL between either the goalies or some of the regular ice, the regular skaters?
Yeah, for sure. For cash games, I mean, I guess cash games or GPP, I'll always start at Vegas odds because I always start the goaltender position first. Cash games, I'm not going to take a lot of risks with my goalies. I'm going to pretty much find that big Vegas favorite, hopefully at home, versus like a weak offensive team. For cash games, you always want to try and look for a team that allows a lot of shots because your saves are going to give you your high floor for cash games, but that always doesn't work out. And same with Vegas. I mean, Vegas isn't always right. like we've had a couple times this year, close to minus 300 odds where the goalie actually took the loss. That isn't going to happen all the time. Vegas is usually fairly close with that sort of thing. So that's where I start with goalies for sure. Also with cash games, looking for your forwards, I always like to look for guys that take a lot of shots, like 2.5 to 3.5 shots per game type thing. And then another stat that I use, an easy site like a Puckalytics or something, is shot attempts, which is just counts all the shots that miss the net, the shots that get blocked. Pretty much just shows a player and how much he fires the puck towards the net, whether or not it hits the net or not. So that's always a good indicator of a high floor. So if you can find a player like in the 5, 6K range that's taken like 3+ shots per game, he's going to be a really good cash game player.
I've always compared you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, you know, how we want to, because we all these pieces of information, by the way, are baked into the projection system, which we have up on the site now, which is giving you projections for every single hockey player on a given night. So I've always compared goalies in that way to pitchers in baseball. They stand out there, they do this one thing that's totally opposite of what everyone else on the ice or the field does. A lot of their implied value rests in things like that, like the win, you know, where we grab it from Vegas odds. So do you see that as like those kind of comps between those two positions?
Yeah, that's a great comparison. I mean, especially when you're looking at cash and GPP, or even looking at DraftKings versus FanDuel, for instance. Like DraftKings, I mean, you're looking for more strikeouts, or at least last year. I don't know if there's any changes going into MLB this season, but strikeouts are kind of king on DraftKings, whereas you really need that win on FanDuel. Well, that's kind of the same thing for hockey is for your goalie. DraftKings, you're really looking for those saves, whereas over on FanDuel, that win is key. So yeah, very, very good comp there.
Yeah, it's understanding the scoring systems between the sites is paramount whenever you're doing this kind of thing. And a lot of these things, if you have some basic inputs, you can. That's not too difficult to start putting together projection systems on your own to figure some of this stuff out if you can just do, you know, a little bit of math and get a little bit of data. But let's talk about tonight's slate. So this is a huge one. If I'm new to hockey, or maybe I'm long in hockey and I just want some advice. Where let's start with goalies. Who do you see as some of the goalie? Is there a guy that you suspect is a chalk play in at behind? What is it? Between the pipes? Is that the saying?
Between the pipes, yeah. That's like a Canadian thing.
So where am I looking at goalie tonight?
Yeah, there's with a ton of options tonight. I mean, I don't think ownership's really going to be a factor really at all. Some of the chalkier guys, though, are probably going to be like Braden Holtby. The Capitals are on the road. They're in New Jersey. New Jersey isn't a very good team. They are better at home. So I'm kind of avoiding that one because it might be a little bit chalky. Carey Price has been a little inconsistent, but he's got a great matchup on the road, too. He is in New York against the Islanders tonight. But myself, the guys that I wrote about in the article for cash games mostly is going to be Mike Condon for the Ottawa Senators. He's at home versus the Flames tonight. Over his last 8 starts, he's 6-1-1. And he has shut out the Washington Capitals as well as the Columbus Blue Jackets in that time, which are two of the top teams in the NHL right now. So he's my number one choice tonight. And then going for GPP, I'm really looking at Mike Smith. Now, I never really ever recommend Arizona Coyote players, goalies, defense, forwards. They just pretty much suck. But for GPPs, you're trying to separate yourself. So he's going to be low-owned for one. He's been way better at home for two. And the third thing is he's playing Vancouver, who's playing on a back-to-back night on the road, as well, and they've just been one of the worst. I think the second worst road record in the NHL with just 6 wins this year. So everything's kind of adding up as a good GPP play for him. And it's a late game too. And with all sports, usually those late games are a little bit lower owned than the early slate or the early games in the slate.
That's a great point. That's actually DFS across the board. DFS strategy is you're totally right. Those later games, people for whatever reason. I mean, there's sometimes a little uncertainty about later games simply because you're not in the same news cycle as the earlier ones. Hockey doesn't strike me as a sport that has the same problems as, say, I mean, maybe you could be correct me if I'm wrong here. It doesn't seem to have the same problems as, say, a basketball where, you know, you can at 7 o'clock look like everything's fine, and then 10 o'clock you realize that someone's just a late scratch because that last 3 hours leading up into the game, something changed or an injury cropped up. Does hockey have that same? Is there the same issues you find in hockey, or is it, you know, you kind of have most of the information going in?
you pretty much have the information going in. Like in the morning when I wake up, the goalies usually aren't out. There's just one or two goalies will be confirmed the night before type thing if they haven't played the night before. But for the most part, I pay attention like 9, 10 o'clock Eastern time. The teams start putting out their morning skate information. So line combinations, who's going to start. Even if they don't know who's going to start, usually the last goalie off the ice type thing is the goalie that they're going to project to start. So you, going into the night games, you're going to know, unless a team is just really doesn't know which goalie is going to start that night. You only got maybe one decision. But as for the rest of the lines, we've got all that information well into the day, which is really nice for hockey.
Give me a couple teams that I can stack tonight. I know this is another thing where, you know, it seems like hockey has a lot of comps to baseball, where it oftentimes, especially for tournaments, maybe even for cash games as well, where stacking a team has some of that compounding effect that you want to have when you're looking at your scores. You know, teams help, guys help each other. In baseball, they help each other by driving each other in. In hockey, they help each other by assisting and just, you know, scoring goals with their teammates in mind. So a couple stacks that maybe I can maybe focus in on tonight.
Yeah, for sure. So for stacking, I do it a little bit different between cash games and GPP. For cash games, I'm going to target like one or two of the highest scoring games. So tonight it's going to be the Toronto-Philly. Toronto's playing back-to-back, third game in four nights. Philly, which is my favorite team, this is very hard to say, they really suck defensively. One of the worst in the league. So I'm really targeting that game for a lot of goals tonight. So for cash games, what I'll do is I'll probably take one guy from the top line, one guy from the second line, say, of the Flyers. So let's go, say, Giroux and Simmons. The nice thing about stacking them in cash is that they both take lots of shots. So they got a high floor, they got upside, and then not only do you cover two lines on that team, but you also cover the power play where they play together. So that's one thing I look for in cash, is kind of finding one team but only using two players, usually on opposite lines, but play together on the power play. For GPP, I'm probably going to line stack the top line for Philly, the top line for Toronto, and try and put them together somehow, hoping that game, we've had a lot of games with like 10 plus goals, like back in 1980s style hockey. So if you can get one of those games and you team stack, or complete game stack, kind of like a baseball, doing the same thing, is looking for that high scoring game, you can really get ahead in tournaments.
No, that's great stuff. And like I said, you know, this is some of that stuff. You, if you want to get some insight, we're putting up NHL content every day with just general picks. That's all free. So you get over to the site and get some of the early thoughts on where some of the value might lie on a hockey slate. And again, hockey is different than basketball in that some of the information, most of the information you have early doesn't tend to change so much as the day goes on. You can also grab some projection. You're going to grab all the projections that we have for each NHL player. We're able to put lineup together through the numbers that we're using, that Chris is putting together and auditing each day, which we're really proud of the work that he's done over there. Chris, give me before we jump out of here, give me just a couple, just maybe big name guys that you think maybe they're not on a stack, but they are just they're the guys that maybe we've heard of, but they're also you can see people playing them today because they're just in really good situations.
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, I'm looking at the Chicago Blackhawks. Patrick Kane, especially on DraftKings, he's in the mid 7K. I mean, he won the MVP last year. He's averaging just under a point per game this season, and he's 7,400 on DraftKings, which just absolutely doesn't make sense to me at all. So he's almost a must play, and I'll stack him with Anisimov, his centerman, and Artemi Panarin, who also won the Rookie of the Year last year. So that's a pretty good line to stack. I think they're going to be chalky, but they're playing Winnipeg tonight. And just checking here, Winnipeg has lost, I believe, four straight games, and they've given up like 25 goals in their last six games. I'm just going to double check on that. Yeah, it's they've lost six of their last eight, sorry. And they've allowed three or more goals in like six straight games. So it's just been tons of goals they've been letting in. So Chicago's a great choice tonight at a little bit of a discount on DraftKings.
Fantastic stuff, man. Keep up the great work with NHL. Like I said, head over to the site. You can see all the work Chris has been doing for us for hockey. Really proud of it. Looking forward to having, hopefully within the next couple of months, our NHL optimizer stood up so we can be pumping out optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings using our projections. That's coming down the pike. It's in the production development pipeline right now. Really excited once we get to that point because we think it's going to be just sort of changing sort of how maybe you play hockey, especially if you don't think you know enough about hockey. Like maybe I don't. Maybe I find myself playing a little more hockey because just having that at your fingertips is a powerful tool. Chris, man, great luck for tonight's slate, and have fun with the All-Star game. I don't know if the All-Star game is a big thing in hockey, but if it is,
They change it to a 3-on-3 format, so it's a lot more entertaining than it used to be, but it's still just an all-star game. I'll be watching golf. I'm going to sweat golf in about 20 minutes for the next 4 days straight.
Yeah, next week we'll try to have Chris on before a little earlier so we can talk some golf and have a better idea of that. All right, man, be good.
Have a good day.